We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Blue Wire.
NBA Most Valuable Player, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis trailing the lob. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
2 seconds. Middleton. Yes! Chris Middleton.
Back jumper. Got it!
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Hey there. Welcome to the Eurostep, a Milwaukee Bucks podcast, proudly a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I am Ty Windisch, one of your hosts, and I am joined as always by my resilient co-host, Rohan Kadi. My man is fully vaxxed as of yesterday, and feeling the brunt of it right now. Rohan, how's it going? Are you an anti-vaxxer yet?
No, and I'm glad you actually mentioned this because it gives me an opportunity to say something. If any of you listening out there have any questions, you're wondering what's actually going on. Is this vaccine safe? Is it effective? I can do my best. Hit me up. I will do my best to try to give you the most relevant information that I can and try to, you know, sort of answer any questions that you have. I am not a medical professional yet, but I can direct you to credible sourced information. If you do have any questions, please feel free to hit me up.
I love this. Just for the people, Rohan, spreading the good word about the vaccine. I'm a big fan of this. I'm halfway there. I'm hoping to join you next month. And then hopefully sometime after that, literally join you when we're fully vaxxed.
Yeah.
Someday we can meet safely, finally, now that we're, you know, making progress, I'll say.
Live this pod pandemic. For the finals, question mark?
Oh, now you're talking my language. Well, will the Bucks get to the finals? Let's see. A big step in dictating how far the Bucks go will be, you know, how high can they raise their own ceiling this season? There's no more major roster moves left to be made. The Bucks have the pieces they're going to have, except pretty much, mostly, almost all of them.
So, Austin Rivers is a nugget.
Yeah, for at least 10 days. But
is it a 10-day?
I thought it was a 10. I could be wrong. I thought it was a 10-day. Regardless, the Bucks need to figure out how to get the most out of those pieces. So the subject of today's podcast is what we want to see most from the Bucks down the stretch. If you're thinking to yourself, Ty, that was one of your best segues ever, I would agree. I would agree. Very proud of that one. But Rohan, I'll start with you. We can kind of go back and forth here. The Bucks have a handful of games left, playoffs starting in May, not a ton of time to finish tuning up, and clearly they need some tune-up. The Bucks have not played great basketball against strong opposition this season. What are you looking to see as we get closer to these playoffs?
I'm glad you mentioned the not playing well against good teams. I think it was Matt Moore at HP Basketball on Twitter who pointed out using Cleaning the Glass data that the Bucks are now 0-4 against teams that rank in both top 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency.
It's a little misleading. It's just Utah and Phoenix.
But given that.
Yeah, I know. They lost to Phoenix by 1 point twice and got blown out by a good Jazz team. It's a good stat. They're still below 500, I think, ironically, against teams above 500. So I think that to me paints more of a picture than two tough matchups doing numbers against the Bucks.
Yeah, that's fair. What I was trying to sort of illustrate is that your point is that they are seemingly struggling against good teams. And one thing, what prompted us to really talk about this, what we want to see down the stretch is obviously Monday's game against Phoenix. It has its own issues. I'll say that.
A mess.
An absolute mess of a game. That's a great way to put it.
A debacle.
Debacle. How else can we adjectify this?
A fluster cuck.
Incredible. it was a tough game, but it did sort of prompt the question, like, how are the Bucks executing down the stretch? Because that's one thing I was personally just looking at, as we only have now 15 regular season games left for Milwaukee. And you mentioned up top, there's not a lot of time left for, you know, the Bucks to sort of shore themselves up for the playoffs, get them to flip that switch, as you will say sometimes. But that's one thing I was looking for. And I guess we have a couple more things we want to look at. And one thing that was brought up again in that Phoenix game was a PJ Tucker lineup, because we haven't seen a lot of that, given he has been injured. He's missed, like, what was it, 6 games with a calf strain, I believe.
I think so. He's nearly missed as many Bucks games as he's played, or maybe he has missed as many as he's played at this point. I think he's logged 7 games so far. So yeah, he was out of the lineup for quite a while with that calf strain though.
Yeah, so we don't have a large sample size yet, but I feel like last night's game was the best opportunity to really see, last night as we're recording this, I should say, best opportunity to see how PJ Tucker would fit with the closing fives. And unfortunately, we did not get another large sample for that.
Yeah, Brook Lopez was out there as the compliment to Giannis in the front court for all but the last, minute 06, I think it was, when PJ checked in, a minute and something. So obviously crunch time is a little bit longer than literally 1 minute, however you want to define it for, you know, pulling stats. But, you know, this was a close game in the fourth quarter that the Bucks had, I think, a 7-point lead with several minutes to go. And up until that last, very last minute, Brook Lopez was out there. PJ Tucker was not. The Bucks bled points in those minutes. CP3 absolutely just demolishing Milwaukee's defense by getting around his man on a screen and then just eating in the mid-range, which are very comfy looks for him. Brook Lopez obviously is not equipped to do a whole lot about that, and it was bad. Brook Lopez was getting eaten alive. PJ Tucker finally comes in, and the Bucks are able to make it to overtime, despite a whole nother bullet point we'll get to later, late game execution or final minute execution, which is maybe the biggest concern for the Bucks, and that's saying something. But yeah, we did not get enough PJ Tucker in a matchup that really felt kind of perfect for him, because the Suns are so perimeter oriented. You know, if it was the Nuggets or, you know, the Sixers, maybe you're worried, as good as PJ is, like, Joel Embiid is just too big. You know, Jokic might just be too big. The Suns are going to play entirely through Chris Paul and Devin Booker. And, you know, Ayton's going to do what Ayton does. Giannis can guard Ayton. PJ Tucker was okay guarding him. The Suns aren't going to hunt that mismatch at all. It's not really a mismatch. So it was just such an obvious move to put in Tucker, and it took the Bucks, Mike Budenholzer, so long to do it. One could argue it cost them that game.
You really could argue that it cost them that game. Like you mentioned, they bled points, and Chris Paul was absolutely doing things to Brook Lopez. Like, Chris Paul is a master of snaking a pick and roll, and when you're putting a lumbering center out there like Brook Lopez, he will use him as an offensive screener. Like, he will use the defender as an offensive screener, and we saw that aplenty. He was, like, sometimes you just have to tip your cap, respect him, because that's just incredible. That's like, Chris Paul is going to do that against most players, most teams, but you're not helping when you're really giving him a specific avenue to do so, which is why this game ended up being the way it was. And it ended up being an overtime game when they easily could have won it, because we saw when PJ Tucker was put in that it was all right. It was all right. Not much of that sort of pick and roll defense it wasn't hampered. It was actually enhanced by putting PJ in there, because you want to say, oh, deceptively long Brook Lopez is going to be able to do. I'm not calling you out in specifically. I just wanted to use that. It's such a fun phrase. It's such a fun phrase. But he can actually move bit more than Brook Lopez. So you see those sort of actions with PJ in there rather than Brook, and you see them sort of, you know, work out better for Milwaukee. And I don't know. It's just hopefully going forward, this is actually like a point of evidence that they can say, oh, we saw this. Maybe we should use this more. It works. Because if they're going with the topic or the mindset, I should say, of this is the regular season as a test, use it. Use it as a test. If next game, show up, especially like against a good team like the Sixers, given, like you mentioned earlier, PJ might not have like the greatest matchup out there with Embiid, but, you know, see what happens.
Just be more reactive in general.
Exactly. Exactly. Be reactive instead of trying to be proactive and using your own scheme because it clearly was not working.
They ended up being inactive. But I think, you know, for the purposes of this pod of what we want to see, we want to see more PJ. So, you know, again, the next two games against Philly, maybe not the best time to see a ton of it, but especially more PJ Tucker in the closing lineups with specifically Drew, Chris, and Giannis. And I don't want to get in a whole debate about the fifth guy. Let's just say Dante for now. It's probably going to be Dante. You know, I think you could make some compelling cases that I would very much listen to for a few other players, but let's just say Dante. That part I'm a little less interested in, especially for this conversation. The main takeaway, let's see more PJ Tucker in these big situations, especially if the Bucks are looking to switch and do not need mammoth Brook Lopez to body up a big guy. And we've seen, I mean, even then in some situations, like we've seen Giannis play some incredible defense on Nikola Jokic. Like you could make the case that even against Philly, like make Giannis try and guard Embiid and PJ can take some shifts and still get out and be able to switch and recover and everything else. I think Philly is just such an extreme case because you get to quote-unquote guard Ben Simmons as well, so it makes it a little easier to sneak Brook Lopez out there. But that said, over the stretch run against especially non-Philly teams, really everybody against Philly, considering you're not going to see Denver again unless you're literally in the finals, let's see PJ Tucker out there closing games. And this moves to something else on our list here. Maybe let's see some more switching. The Bucks have switched more. Like, clearly, we all know this from watching. The data backs it up. I've shared it before per league source. I'm so fancy. But they just are. I'd like to see it even more. I just think, you know, the zone is what it is. It's hard to get too mad because we've yelled repeatedly about how we want to see more things. I think that is, we do.
It is a thing. So
yes, that's definitely true. You could probably talk me into just wanting to see switching and no zone. Like I don't love the zone.
Zone against maybe a team like Philly would work better.
Yeah, I suppose.
Especially when you have like a guy like Ben Simmons out there, that'd make things a lot easier. We'll see.
Yeah, it would. But you could just double too. Regardless, like I just want to see even more switching. Like I think switching and rotating too. I feel like the Bucks, as evidenced by the breakdown of the Mikal Bridges three, which has been the talk of Twitter over the last day or so, the Bucks don't usually rotate smartly. So, you know, maybe the help defense looks even worse than it is because nobody is rotating over to help the helper. In this case, it might have been helping the helper, whatever it was. There was no rotation. Five Bucks end up, you know, within 10 feet of each other in the paint. 2.5 shooters are open. And if you look back, DeAndre Ayton still probably would have gotten the offensive rebound if Devin Booker had shot in that particular situation. So I just think I want to see the Bucks just be able to guard shooters and players on the perimeter better, whether it's getting the switching down even more or getting better at, and getting better about rotating and just taking away those open threes. Because I do feel like every huge run the Bucks have gone on has been partially because on defense, they just didn't give up a ton of open threes. And it just makes such a dramatic difference for this team.
For sure. For sure. Like one of the main benefits of switching is that you don't have to get into rotation.
Correct.
Realistically, unless you're trying to scram switch or something like a big mismatch in the post, then it could, you know, sort of get dicey, but just on its face, that's the main purpose of switching because you're not letting any defenders get any space, off of a on ball or off ball screen. So you don't need to help. Like that's the main point. You don't need to like shadow help or shadow double or anything. So you don't need to get into rotation. So that's why another thing is like, if you're going to switch more, which they should, another thing is you need to lay off the help defense when you're switching. Those two cannot work together whatsoever, because it'll just break completely. So if you are going to be switching, I'm going to be watching for more, like, I guess less help defense in that regard, less shadow doubles.
Yeah, you can tell I watch a lot of Bucks because I like confused them in my mind as I was talking, because Milwaukee's defense has been so muddled at times. But yeah, and I don't know. Do we want to see any drop anymore?
It works against some teams.
Yeah, so I think that's scheme. The answer. Does it?
It works as a base scheme. You just can't use it when you're sort of playing to catch up or playing to get ahead. And you're trying to go on a run, that doesn't really work. It's like switching is a lot more intense in terms of actual defensive energy and stuff like that. So you can't really do it all the time. Like the best example of that is like the Warriors death lineup. Like a main argument is, why don't they just start that? Why didn't they just start that? Some might say, why do you just play Anderson Varejao to begin with? But I'm not Steve Kerr.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I can't answer that question. But the reason they can't just start that is because that's very, very tiring. You cannot do that for 48 minutes. So as a base scheme, I would say drop. It still can be effective. It can't be there when you're sort of either clearly at a disadvantage with that drop scheme, or you're sort of playing to get a lead, or you're playing from behind.
Fair. Yeah, I agree that they should still drop when it's correct to do. I just, the thing about
you
base
shouldn't,
scheme.
You shouldn't just do it to do it. Like, yes. You should do it if it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, but you can't just go full switch all the time.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know, since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
I agree. And I can't believe you're selling me on drop and on zone on the same podcast. I feel like your defensive takes might be unpopular this episode. But
it's fine.
I think I agree. I mean, we wanted the variety, so let's get the variety. I'm not super sold on the zone, but I'm okay with it. But I
the
do.
Zone
I
just, needs some work. The zone really needs some work.
It does
unless,
need some work.
Until we see it actually be effective in certain matchups, and we don't see just Brook Lopez just lunging from like under the rim to a corner shooter, don't do it unless you can fix that, please. Or you have different personnel out there. Like, just please.
Yes, definitely agree with you on that one. What else do you want to see? Where do you want to go from here? I feel like there's a couple different places. We have stuff on our sheet. I think we're probably going to start thinking of things not on our sheet as well. What's top of mind for you that we haven't already covered on what you want to see from the Bucks down the stretch?
Well, I mean, I think I just hinted at it a little bit in terms of I need to see more lineup versatility.
Yeah.
In terms of the center rotation. Like, if you're running zone, you can't have Brook Lopez out there. You got to have Bobby Portis out there, or Giannis at center, or PJ Tucker at center. It just cannot be Brook Lopez. And I doubt it's going to be PJ Tucker, because we've seen him sort of his discontent with sort of just being a defensive guy who just runs on the court. And fair enough, why would you want to do that? But like, especially because he's still like an undersized player. He's what, 6'6", I think?
6'6", or 6'5", yeah. Small.
So yeah, very small. So even that doesn't really fix the running problem, because it's not like he has an enormous wingspan to sort of cover, even though he's more mobile than Brook Lopez. You sort of fall into the same trap there. So maybe a guy like a Bobby Portis, or like just Giannis at center. I guess those are your really only two options, unless you want to throw Thanasis out there, which is a viable option in my opinion. So yeah, we just need more front court versatility in terms of lineups.
Yeah, I Bobby Portis has just been compelling to me lately. Like, I think about Bobby Portis a lot. There's a clip
about Bobby Portis.
probably unhealthy, but who knows? Probably not the most unhealthy part of doing a Bucks podcast, but Portis is just like, I don't know if we even talk about the upside enough of like a perfectly used Bobby Portis, given what he can do on the offensive end and the way he shoots the basketball. Like, if you're running a lot of zone and he's comfortable and able to, I don't want to say thrive, but survive, and the same with switching, like, I think there's so much upside there that we kind of are missing. And we've talked about diminishing returns and all that on the last pod. Go listen to the last pod, but or two pods ago, whichever it was. I don't remember.
I think it was the last one. It was the last one. It was locker room.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But I do think there is potential there. And I would like to see, like you're saying, this lineup versatility and sort of this question that I've seen talked about on Twitter as well. Like, is Bud's rotation is it determined by merit or not? And I think those things go hand in hand, right? Like, who is the best fit for the scheme and who's like been playing the best against that opponent that game or just on an individual night. And I do think like those things are kind of hand in hand, and I'd like to see some better decisions made and that, you know, adapt the personnel to the scheme a little bit as much as you can at this point in the season.
For sure, for sure. You can't really have it the other way around where you sort of adapt the scheme to fit the personnel, because you do have so many options. That's the big talking point when you get a guy like PJ Tucker and you have a guy like Bobby Portis already on the team and Giannis, obviously. So you have the versatility. So you don't need to build a scheme around players. You need to have players and build schemes around them.
Yeah. And just, you know, have the right players out there for the right schemes. Like,
exactly.
That
was our main gripe with the Warriors game that they lost, is why wasn't Bobby Portis out there? Like, that's something I want to see more, is more reactive lineup changes.
And even then you can even be more reactive and go, oh, Bobby was playing great and Brook Lopez is getting eaten alive. Let's not drop at all for the rest of this game. Let's go to switching now, because that's going to be much better for Portis than if we ask him to play drop and he somehow like drops into a different dimension, which is plausible out there with Bobby Portis and drop.
3 second violation.
Also,
I'm surprised he hasn't done that yet. Honestly,
I think he's caught one before.
Has he?
Yeah.
Probably.
But maybe not.
Not to.
Yeah, it's yeah. My favorite Bucks inexplicable mistake that happens way too often. I think Thanasis has to lead the league by like a bajillion percentile, or be in the first percentile in, or 100th in basket interference. My guy was on a run where he probably got 3 or 4 within a week, and he's been better since, but he's still every time he jumps and is like really close to basket interferencing on a Bucks shot. And it's like, you know, most of the time it probably doesn't matter, but please be careful, Thanasis.
I mean, how else are you going to get those massive putback dunks?
You know, listen, you cannot knock the hustle, but sometimes you can. And this is one of those times. Please be a little more careful. There's a minor thing I want to see. No more Thanasis basket interference. But let's talk about late game execution. We don't just want to see this. We need to see this going down the stretch, because whatever it is, player side, coaches side, personnel, whatever, it's just been atrocious. I cut together two of the most embarrassing clips from the ends of basketball games that you will find and put them to Yakety Sacks and tweeted them from the Eurostep Pod account at Eurostep Podcast.
Follow it.
They happened within 2 weeks of each other. The Warriors game catastrophe, where I don't know what happened with the inbounds pass. Chris gets blocked by Wiggins. Pat Connaughton takes a backyard, like heading inside, but want to take one more shot kind of shot, and it doesn't go in and the Bucks lose. And then the Suns thing that, I mean, this one was mostly largely on Giannis for just like you know, maybe don't just try and ISO straight up and make it life harder than it has to be. But
or like not even that. Just don't trip over your own feet.
Yeah. Also that. I mean, it's like it was sad. It was
I
just
saw
sad.
That and I just facepalmed.
It was.
I like, just, you've got to be kidding.
And it was just. And again, that's not like you can't blame Bud because Giannis tripped, right? Like that's a little out of the control. But it's just like I just feel like this team has late game deficiencies that we see far too often, and it feels like they're so susceptible to blowing leads in the last 5 minutes because their shot selection is poor and they apparently cannot script and then execute a last play to save their lives. And I don't feel like they usually have the right personnel involved in these things. And it's just an issue. And I need to see a late game closed out successfully before the playoffs if I'm going to believe that this Bucks team has a run in them.
Yeah, for sure. I think the one piece of evidence we do have in terms of the Bucks actually executing late is the first game against Philly.
Where without Giannis, Embiid.
Yeah, without Embiid, obviously. Yeah, like so. Dwight Howard drop off to Embiid is it's pretty substantial.
Yes, it's fair to say.
But yeah, just Giannis putting that game away, that's going to be obviously more difficult against Embiid. But that's what we've seen. That's like the one game where you can point to and it's like, oh, okay. Okay, so they can do this. Like, that's just Giannis being Giannis in that sort of regard. One thing I just thought of this. When I was watching that play where Giannis sort of got the isolation, so Chris got the rebound, the defensive rebound, I think, or was it off a mid-basket? I can't remember. He was bringing the ball up before. He passed it to Jrue Holiday, who just immediately just passed it off to Giannis. And it was like, okay, this is Giannis time. Is that the right call?
See, I defended it the last Suns game that he ended up taking the shot, but I don't think it's the universal right call. But now is a good time to get into a discussion with these numbers I pulled up that didn't surprise you, which kind of shocked me because I was surprised. But Giannis, you know, I think there's all these other stupid conversations happening now, right? Of like, oh, it's because he's not a closer and he's not that. Shut up. I don't care about that conversation right now.
It's completely based in narrative and not fact. Shots to Ramona Shelburne.
I was like half laugh and it almost turned into a cough. But I do think getting Giannis off ball more or just at least involved in actions more is the right call there. I don't think an ISO for this team and these personnel ever is going to be the right call when you can put defenses in a tough position, getting Giannis and Chris or Giannis and Jrue involved in actions together and just open up more possibilities and make it harder for defenses. So in that avenue, I would say no, it's not the right call to have Giannis ISO, not because he's not a closer or doesn't have ice in his veins or any of that stupid nonsense, but just because like you have resources you're not using. Like, go watch the play. Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton were accomplishing nothing. They weren't even really spaced out from the other players on the floor that well. Like, there was nothing
of
value. It
was just
value.
A straight bunch of ISO.
It was schoolyard. It was just like, he literally could have yelled, ISO, ISO, like you and your buddies on your street when you want to prove a point. And it was, that's what happened. That's literally what happened. But, so saying this, I went to go pull the numbers because I wanted to specifically talk about how bad of a decision that was, as opposed to getting Giannis moving in pick and roll. Turns out the data says it's not a bad decision. The data backs up what happened. Unbelievably, Giannis scoring 1.06 points per possession in ISO. Very good this season. Like, actually a really strong and completely contrary to the narratives out there. Like, he's done really well just sizing up his man and going. And we've seen it. Like, we know he can do that.
That's why defenses need to load up against him, because if you just go one-on-one, you're toast.
And it's kind of shockingly, like, Phoenix didn't really get help there, which really surprised me given how bunched it felt like the rest of the shooters were on the floor. Like, they probably should have just sent help, but they didn't. So if Giannis doesn't fall over.
When's the last time a team has played Giannis straight up? Can you think of it just off the top of your head?
Not really.
Because no one does it. You can't.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't work. It really doesn't work. Yeah, that's a great call. But so 1.06 points per possession in isolation, 1.01 points per possession for Giannis Antetokounmpo as a role man this season, despite the Bucks adding shooters to space those actions more and adding Jrue Holiday, who should theoretically be a perfect ball handler to pair with him with a much tighter handle and more ability to score, around the basket than Chris Middleton. You said you're not shocked by this. Explain your thoughts on Giannis not being that good in pick and roll this season.
Well, it's twofold. One, it's not used nearly as much as it should be. There's not as much of a sample as there probably should be in that regard. So numbers are going to fluctuate when there's not, a large N or sample. Also, when you're running a pick and roll defense against like a Drew Giannis, a Chris Giannis pick and roll, the defense is going to go to Giannis. And that leaves Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, whatever ball handler you want to use, open. And so they get the points. That's what happens. They sort of score in that regard, and either they can miss it or they can make it, or like obviously, but it's sort of out of Giannis's hands now. It's sort of like the ball handler sort of playing against the defense, not Giannis, because the defense loads up against Giannis. So that's why you're probably not seeing a lot of Giannis being efficient as a role man, because the defense is going to load up against that rather than with the ball handler.
Yeah, he's also been turning it over a lot in those looks, 13.5% of the time. But to your first point, guess how many role man possessions Giannis has this season, according to NBA StatsStats. So if they're wrong, blame the NBA, not us.
I don't even know where to start.
In 49 games, to give you that number as a baseline.
49 games? Let's say 80.
74.
Ooh. Okay.
74.
That's a win.
Yeah, that's really close. So frequency-wise, as a percentage of his plays, I believe is what that number is, it's like 5.9%, 6%. So it's barely a part of Giannis's shot diet. He's third on the Bucks in total possessions as a role man. Brooke Lopez and Bobby Portis both have more. Bryn Forbes is fourth at 32. I'm guessing some of these DHOs are getting logged as Bryn Forbes
or just
role man.
Or just an inverted pick and roll with Giannis.
Yeah, but that's just hilarious to me. And Forbes is actually scoring more points per possession than Giannis. I think I tweeted it, but do you want to know who's first on the Bucks in this? It only 12 possessions, so it doesn't really count, but it's funny.
12 possessions for what?
For as a role man, but who's first in points per possession. So it's a very small sample, but they're first in efficiency.
Is it Chris?
Pat Connaughton.
Of course it is.
Pat scoring 1.58 points per possession, zero turnovers, shooting free throws. And I kind of get it. Like, Pat has the hops people think Dante has. Like, I feel like, I don't know. I see it. I get it. I see the vision. Chris actually has been pretty bad too. 1.09. Points per possession as a role man. So not great. But yeah, it's just like, even in a year where we talk about the Bucks are trying more things and doing more, they're still not doing this a bunch, which is very disappointing, because like we saw, teams are going to be ready for the ISOs. You mentioned it. No one's going to play Giannis straight up. And in the playoffs, when you have so much time to prepare for each matchup, nobody is going to play Giannis straight up. It's not going to happen. So you need to figure out more than just the ISOs. The fact that the Bucks have run 74 possessions of Giannis as a role man this season is greatly disappointing to me. You couldn't get two per game he plays, really? You'd be at just about 100. Two per game. That's not a lot. Considering the Bucks will let Brooke Lopez take 45 seconds, somehow not shot clock violation possessions, spinning around in the post and lumbering and trying to draw contact. Take out one of those per game and make it an additional Giannis pick and roll. Like, there's no reason not to do that. And yet, here we are, yet again, having to wonder what the fully optimized Giannis's role man experience is, because we barely ever see it.
That's true. That's true. You want to know, this is what I just thought. I don't have the data to back this up yet, but I'll find it and I'll tweet it out after. The team that is best suited to play Giannis straight up is Philly, right?
With Embiid and Simmons taking off.
Yeah. What team does Giannis go off against?
Philly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonder if those two are correlated.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, I mean, that I think is another reason that the Philly series probably bodes well. But I think the Bucks need to figure out this Giannis as a roller thing, because against the non-Philly teams who are going to just build the barriers, you need ways to get around that. And, DHOs are part of it, and like getting players moving off screens and off ball. But Giannis is going to have the ball. I'm glad the isolations are going well, but this Roman thing is going to be really important. I think we've touched on this before of like, you know, as great as he is, probably long run, his most productive play, I think, is going to be a dangerous ball handler initiating actions with him and him rolling to the rim, able to catch lobs, which doesn't happen nearly enough, clean up misses if the player gets, an open jumper and doesn't sink it. So that is disappointing. What's wild is Giannis's efficiency on the other end of pick and rolls.
Is it
91st percentile? Giannis as a ball handler in pick and rolls, 1.07 points per possession. So Giannis initially, and again, these numbers are probably cloudy with some DHOs and other stuff, but you mentioned earlier the inverted pick and rolls with like Brent Forbes. Those plays are working really well. Nobody on the team is more efficient than Giannis running a pick and roll. And I think, let me go to totals here. He's actually done that more than he's rolled this season, according to NBA stats.
It makes sense because that's just a broken play for the defense. You can't do anything realistically about it. You just have to pray that the shooters miss. Because if you're properly spaced out and you get you get the big that's guarding Giannis on the screen and you're switching, like trying to catch up to that with a smaller guy as it's an inverted pick and roll, who's trying to both cover Giannis and get back to the shooter, unless you're just rotating machines, and which we've seen in the past, it's not going to work. You're going to find an open look somewhere. So that does not surprise me at all.
Yeah, only three players have initiated more pick and rolls than Giannis. The order of these players in efficiency is exactly what you would expect.
Is it Drew, Chris, Giannis?
No. Oh, Giannis is the highest. But outside of Giannis, the other three guys, it's Drew, Chris, Dante.
Ah, okay.
So Drew, honestly, pretty disappointing. 78th percentile in ball handler, points per possession, 0.99. So like less efficient than all of the Giannis plays, which I guess that part makes sense, but
Giannis
not
is
all
better
that good.
Than Drew Holiday.
Yes.
Sorry.
Hot take. But, yeah. Hot take from us. Chris Middleton, 0.94, 68th percentile, and Dante, 0.84. 44th percentile. Dante has ran 120 pick and rolls this season.
Has he really?
Barely any of them have been good, apparently, according
that
to
does not
the numbers.
Shock me at all.
Pat is the worst, though, but he's only run 10, but 0.7. I would guess a lot of those are garbage time with like Thanasis or Bobby Portis.
Yeah, for sure. Dante, not a point guard.
Yeah,
I'll say that. I'm not gonna say that he's not gonna develop, but
I don't think he's.
As of now, I'm trying to be fair here, Ty. As of now, Dante, not a point guard.
Also, this confirms my theory that Pat's more of a two than a four, but that's other news. So I think, again, getting back to the main topic of like, what do we want to see? I want to see more of all of these plays, like not the Dante ones, but like more. I want to see Giannis in pick and rolls more on both ends, because I do. And this is actually a historical thing that I've dug into before, like a lot of seasons. Giannis ends up with a crazy high points per possession as plays where they're logged as him as the ball handler in pick and rolls. And I do think whenever you can do something that's just weird, defenses struggle with it. And like we've seen Denver spam this. Best wishes to Jamal Murray on your recovery. But like Jokic running pick and rolls with Murray as the screener, it like breaks teams because who's ready for that? Like you mentioned with Forbes, like if you switch, Giannis can pummel the little guy. If you drop back to stop Giannis from rampaging to the rim, the little guy has an open shot. And obviously, if you stick to the shooter, then Giannis has an open lane to the basket. You can't do that. So I want to see Giannis on both ends of pick and rolls more. And I want to see Drew specifically, but Drew and Chris kind of handling the ball on some of those more. And I know, I'm fine with running even more Brooke Lopez pick and rolls. I'm a pick and roll guy. I'm a big fan of the action. I think it's good. And I think the Bucks need to work those in, all sorts of them, in place of some of these ugly possessions where like, and everyone on the team is guilty of this. So I don't even want to single out anyone. I usually say Dante and Brooke Lopez because those are the most egregious shots. But like Drew Holiday had some pretty questionable ISOs late in the Suns game where like early shot clock, not open, he pulls. And it's like, you want to just give a guy like that the benefit of the doubt because he's so effective, but also run a play and you can get a much better look for a player that good or better. And that's the better outcome. And I just want to see the Bucks be more judicious in how they use possessions.
For sure. One thing I will say, to be fair to the coaching staff, who am I today?
Wow, yeah.
This is weird. we've seen those sort of actions that they have. I mentioned this on a previous pod. I don't remember when. But I one time saw a beautiful action where Giannis was used as a screener, popped, and then immediately flowed into a Chris Giannis pick and roll as the roller, and they got an open shot in like three different areas they had. So those, they know that. They know what those can do. I wonder if they're saving it a bit.
We better see a whole lot in the playoffs then, because we've seen this flip the switch thing is a fallacy for this team. We've seen it. And we tried to sell ourselves in the bubble. If, oh, they look flat, but they'll figure it out. They didn't figure it out. So I think there's a growing sentiment of like from Bucks fans and Bucks watchers of like, we need to see more of this beforehand, because the exact same situation last year in the bubble, and it did not go well for the Bucks, who dropped game one decisively to Orlando, came back and handled business. Fair, came back and handled business, but then obviously, you know, got rolled by the Heat. So we need to see it before then. So I get saving it to an extent. And you know what? Save the beautiful actions. Save that stuff. Maybe run that to end the game instead of Chris in the near side corner for once, which I just can't handle that anymore.
And again, we've seen that, like the Clippers game.
The play drew up, you mean?
Yeah. Like they know they exist. Like, great point.
Coach of the year candidate, Jrue Holiday.
He might, honestly. Like, who knows? He might be player coach. Is Bud a shadow figure?
If only.
That's the new conspiracy.
No, they'd have to look better for that to be a conspiracy. I'd like to see it. Again, the late game execution has been bad. Running some of this stuff then could fix it. And like, keep it simple with the pick and rolls. Like, you know, a standard Jrue Giannis space pick and roll. Like, teams are going to plan for that whether you're running it a lot or not. Like, I don't think there's that much benefit to saving that. If you want to save the pretty play where Giannis flows off of and then they rescreen and some of that for some, you know, closer moments to surprise people, fine. But I want to see more than like 1.3 Giannis pick and rolls per game. Like, that's
for sure.
You're not, no one's going to be like, you know, stunned, flabbergasted on the court if like they see Giannis roll to the rim. Like, everyone's going to be ready for it. I just think teams are like preparing for it and then realizing the Bucks don't do it, and they're like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And also, I guess no one on the team can really throw lobs, so that might be an option, except Chris to Brook Lopez, except that only works in quarters 1 through 3. So if they can figure out how to weaponize that in sort of getting Chris to throw passes he could make earlier in the game, later in the game, that'd be wild.
That would be wild. We gotta work on. Let's get to Chris, because I have a Chris thing for both sides of the ball. I want to start with defense, actually, because you know I had the dubious honor of defending some of the Bucks stock market valuations after last night's game, and there was a contingency of Bucks fans upset that Chris Middleton did not get an upstock for his late game heroics, despite, I think, overall, a pretty pedestrian offensive game.
He made 2 threes, and those are the 2 threes people cared about, which is good. You want to see him make the shots that matter, but like, you can make other shots too. That's also an option.
He floated through the rest of the game. Not a great overall game on the offensive end. And defensively, there just continues to be issues with Chris on defense. And this is not our bias against Chris. We've said this a lot. We love Chris Middleton. Want to see Chris Middleton.
Guys, we're not biased against Chris. Come on.
First team All-NBA we were talking about earlier this year.
I wanted him to start in the All-Star game.
He wanted him to. I wasn't there, but Rohan wanted him to start in the All-Star game. And actually, I think I almost talked myself into it. But
it was December. Chris was a different animal.
Yeah, really.
Or January, I should say.
Yes. The defense has just been an issue. And I think earlier in the Suns game, I thought it was pretty solid. And he looked like he had a little more juice rebounding. But then more times later, you just see like Juan like losing his man off ball for no real reason. Obviously, Devin Booker just filleted him on that Bridges three I mentioned earlier. And that was like, people are arguing like, was it PJ Tucker's fault or Dante's fault or Jrue Holiday's fault or Pat Connaughton's fault? Well, it was Chris's fault first.
Screen's fault.
Yeah. It was Chris's fault first for getting burned that bad. And then after that, you're going to be in probably a bad situation no matter what. So, but it wasn't just that one play. And the numbers bear this out. The Bucks defense with Chris on the floor is pretty much the worst that it is. And I don't have that number ready, but it's not good. But I know their number with Chris off the floor, their defensive rating is 103.6 points.
Is a higher number good, Ty? That's what I've been told.
The Orlando Magic will disagree.
But CJ McCollum's
brother. Whatever McCollum, but a defensive rating you want to be low, like golf. That's how I think about it. It's like golf. You want a low number. So they allow 103.6 points per 100 possessions when Chris is not out there. That's by far the Bucks defense at its best when you just isolate for like any one player's not being out there. The next closest is Brook Lopez, which probably surprises very few people who pay close attention to the Bucks. When he's not out there, the Bucks have a defensive rating of 106.6. So 3 full points per 100 possessions difference between Chris and Brook Lopez's minutes. So it's like when he's not out there, the Bucks have been like an incredible defense. When he's out there, they've been not that good. And I'll pull up the number now. But like I just think it's noticeable. And it's just an issue, especially coupled with, again, he'll have 14 points through three quarters. It's like if you're going to be scoring that little and adding like 4 assists or whatever, bring some verve defensively. Like you don't have this massive offensive load. We need to see more on defense from Chris Middleton.
For sure. For sure. This is just – it's – I'm getting sick and tired of talking about the Chris Middleton sort of coming in and out of games sort of experience that we've been growing accustomed to the last couple of years, and especially this year, I'd say, considering what you mentioned earlier, in the sense that we know what he can do, and that if he's actually putting like full defensive effort, that would take this team over the top. Because then you have 3 elite, like Chris used to be an elite defender. Elite's a strong, or maybe I'm wrong.
No, he is an elite defender. I'd say he's an elite. He was looked at as an elite 3-and-D player for a few years there.
Yeah, like, and part of that is the elite defense. So like, he used to be insane on the defensive end. And it's sort of fallen off. Like the tools are still there. Obviously, like, he's gotten in better shape. It's not like he's gotten like sort of worse athletically. So he's lost a step or anything. He's just not there. And I don't know what it's going to take to get him there, but he hasn't been there, and it needs to change. It really does.
One interesting thing I was looking at with regard to Chris' defense is how his stocks changed. Not our stocks, but steals and blocks. So these are not perfect measures by any means of defense, but they do give you an idea of just like activity.
They're hustle plays.
Yeah. And I just think like it's still good to block shots and get steals. You know, the block leader is not the best defensive big guy in the league by default.
Neither are rebounding leaders. Shouts to that one voter.
Andre Drummond, baby. But it does tell you something. So like 2014-15, Chris had 2.8 stocks, so steals and blocks, per 100 possessions. The next year, 15-16, he had 2.6. The year after that, 2.7. Then 2017-18, 2.4. Then starting his first All-Star year, 2018-19, so the first Bud season, 1.7, 1.5, 1.8 stocks per 100 possessions. And really, like, the blocks are not changing by a ton, but the steals. So Chris's heyday, 2.6 and then 2.3 twice in a row, steals per 100 possessions. The last 3 years have been 1.6, 1.3, and 1.6. So he's just not making that impact on those numbers or on the overall defense. And I have it now. The Bucks' defensive rating with Chris on is 110.8. And like I said, with him off, it's 103.7. So their defense changes dramatically for the worse in his minutes. They've also actually had a better net rating with Chris off, but that I'm not exactly buying. I think that's a little noisy, but it does have to do, I think, with the change in the level of defense they play with him on the floor.
For sure. For sure. You can't argue against that. Like I've said this before, energy and effort is necessary, but not sufficient. It's necessary for a team, but it's not enough to be a scheme. So it definitely plays a part into that. So Chris, really, that's something, like, getting back to their topic, that's something I want to see. Just more effort from Chris on the defensive end. And we need to see it. We really do.
Yeah, and I feel like it poked through a little bit more lately, but just not enough.
Like you mentioned the Suns game. Like at the beginning, he looked locked in. He looked like, oh, this Devin Booker assignment, I'm going to take this and I'm going to do my best. Like, have that mentality like the entire time against every team. Just you can't take any games off. It takes a lot for this team to aspire to do what they want to do and what people expect them to do. So you can't just be lazy when trying to achieve your dreams. That's just philosophical.
Yeah, it's inspirational. But I think, especially, I mean, we talked about less offensive load for Chris recently because of the addition of Drew. It's also less defensive load. He's not asked, and this really was the case last year too with Wes Matthews, but it's not like he's being asked to guard the best player, you know, for 48 straight minutes. He's going to end up in a tough situation probably against Brooklyn unless the Bucks try to hide him. We'll see what happens if we get to that series. But like Drew, I mean, there was a great story by Eric Name about like the end of the Suns game and how Drew basically fought to be on Booker. It didn't work out because I don't even want to get into the foul call. Phoenix Suns fans are very upset with me, but like
why
Drew,
are they upset with you?
Because I said it shouldn't have been called.
They
found a camera angle 45 minutes after the play happened that makes it look like there's contact. So, of course, it was the right call to call a foul on a shot with 0.3 seconds to go. Of course, that was the right decision. Non-biased opinions at all.
You got to just take – when that happens, you just got to take it and run.
I don't get why – like, don't be salty when you win the – there's like, just take the W and enjoy it. But I digress. But Drew is fighting for these assignments and like fighting through switches and screens to like stick on the best players. So it's not like Chris is being asked to guard Devin Booker for a whole game. He's just going to end up with good players on him and he just needs to be better when that is the case. And just off ball, it's just like falling asleep on the Jay Crowders of the world that it just can't happen. It just cannot happen. And like Giannis still might be the worst offender, but Chris is right up there with him. And at least Giannis is like, theoretically going to go accomplish something via help defense. Like he's such a pterodactyl terror swooping in on possessions and just ruining them. Chris is kind of just loafing around. It's like when you level up a Pokemon that you traded for too high before you have enough gym badges. And sometimes it's just like, you know, Charizard is loafing around this turn. That's Chris on defense too often. It's just like, come on, man.
That's the greatest comparison I've ever heard. Chris is Charizard.
Loafing around Charizard, to be clear. And you know what? Let's just – I think this is one of our last big topics, maybe our last big topic. I want to see a different Chris offensively. And, like, more consistent would be great. I just – I think we're trying to target things that are more in the team's control with this list, right? Like, be better would be a great tip for everyone involved. But it's hard to just set out to be better one day and magically be better, unfortunately.
Unless you're in a Tetacupo.
You know what? Yeah. The Nassas might be like the 50th best player in the league by the time we get to the finals. But there's a
way. Is he not already?
No.
That's an off-season idea, player rankings.
You just want to do that to figure out where the Nassas is?
Yes.
Okay. We might actually end up doing that. But anyway, yes, it would be good if Chris was consistent and just had less 3-for-16 games or whatever. That obviously is true. We're not going to spend a lot of time on that because, like, I don't know what exactly the adjustment is for that. Aside, again, just, like, be better. Please do. But here's a more concrete thing. I want Chris to take more threes. And I this is something I keep thinking about with all the buzz around Steph Curry and his number of 10 threes made in a game games. Like, he has more this season than any player has in their careers, I believe, is the stat. Yep. I think within the last, like, month, he has nearly as many as number two on the list, Klay Thompson, has in his career. I think Steph has 4 in the last few weeks. Klay has 5 ever.
Wild.
Absolutely
get him to Milwaukee, wild. Man. Get
yeah.
him. Let, free Steph.
Free Steph. Bring Steph to Lake Michigan.
He's extension eligible this summer.
Sign and trade extension. Sign and extend. Let's do it. But am I expecting Chris to go have, you know, 5-10 threes made in a games this month? No, it's unrealistic. But Chris does not shoot enough threes. And I just think it's fine that, you know, he had his little blood power struggle and got the ability to shoot more middies. I don't have a problem with that. But I just think more plays should be run for Chris as a shooter. I don't understand, and we've talked on this before, like, the Bucks run Bryn Forbes threes plays often when Bryn Forbes is out there. And they don't really run them for Portis sometimes, but like Bobby Portis ends up shooting a good amount of threes when he's on the floor. He gets out to the corners, whatever. Why not run more plays for Chris to shoot threes and like engineer those looks? Chris Middleton is 28th among three-point percentage this season among all players to shoot at least 25 threes. And that's a low bar. So 28th on that list is good. Tony Snell is first at like 54%, 57%. Yeah, but he shot less than 100 threes.
50-50, 100 season inbound.
I would love it for him. But So Chris, a very good shooter based on volume. And we've known this. This is obvious. One of the better three-point shooters in the league at the volume he shoots at. Do you know, and I know you don't have the doc, but do you know where he ranks in number of attempted total threes this season?
Attempted total threes?
Like, yes.
Obviously, I know what the answer is. But yeah. If I were to say that ahead of time, I would have probably said somewhere in probably like the 70s.
Oh, I would have guessed 20s or 30s probably. There's only so many shooters who take a lot.
It just doesn't feel like he takes that many.
Well, yeah, he's 53rd among all players this season in attempted threes. And what blew my mind was he's tucked right behind Kyrie Irving, who has attempted one more three-pointer and played 400-plus less minutes this season than Chris. So Kyrie, who again, and this season is weird for the Nets because obviously they've been down so many guys, but like, I mean, we know Kyrie likes to shoot, but he's got so much star talent on his team. He's probably taking less shots than he has over the last few seasons, like per game, because there's, again, it's Kevin Durant and James Harden, all these other players. Kyrie Irving in 400 less minutes has attempted less threes. And Kyrie is another guy who's like known for being a mid-range and off the glass artist. Like, it's not like Kyrie is Joe Ingles out here taking all his shots from threes, but there's no point in having a three-point shooter as dangerous as Chris Middleton and not having him put up top 50 in the league three-point attempts. Like, they need to get him more threes, and I just think that could maybe help with the overall offensive consistency issue for Chris.
Yeah, it really could. It really could, especially it's really funny in that you mentioned this. We go from Chris taking a lot of threes and be like, oh man, you should shoot more mid-rangers. And now he's shooting all his mid-rangers. Oh, Chris, you should take more threes. Like, it's funny. Like, and all of those points have been valid. It's funny how things sort of change as time moves on. Wow, I'm being really philosophical
here. I know. I'm really thinking about life today.
Yeah. Gotta always think. I gotta stop. But yeah, I completely agree. Chris, we talked about this on a previous episode, like Chris more in a catch and shoot role, not in that regard, like, oh, he should strictly be a catch and shoot guy, but like get him more catch and shoot opportunities. Like, he doesn't need to create every single one of his shots, get him some unassisted shots. Like, they have Drew, they have Giannis as other creators on the floor. You don't need to have, Chris create every single one of his own shots. So if you get him more in a catch and shoot scenario, it's going to be lethal for the Bucks, considering he is one of the best shooters in the league in terms of volume. So just getting better shooters, like more open looks and easier looks, is easier said than done, but it's possible. And it's definitely possible for Chris Middleton.
Would you consider spot up or off screen the better play type measure for like moving off ball and shooting?
Moving off ball, probably off screen.
Off screen, that's what I'm thinking. I'm just going to pull up the total and just see where he ranks, because I can't imagine it's much. Steph leads the league. So again, it doesn't have to be a player who's not capable offensively. Like, you're allowed to make life easier, even for good players. Like, you don't have to do this. Yeah, this looks like a good measure, because I see Joe Harris up here near the top with 124. Steph with 205. I see KD on this list. Let's just search Middleton. Here he is, 78 of these. So it's not as low as I thought, right under Evan Fournier. So it doesn't make up a lot of his frequency and overall looks, just 7.2%, but there's certainly room for more of that. Let's make Chris's life a little easier. And again, this is another thing where if we determine one of the optimal plays is a pick and roll where, you know, Drew is the ball handler and Giannis is the roll man, what does that leave for Chris? I think there's better answers than he stands in the corner and waits. Like, he could be running off of a screen at the same time to come around the back and be like a pop option. Like, there's a lot to be done there, but let's dig into it and explore this.
For sure. It's just like, it's what we talked about with defense too, just constant motion. You need to have that, especially with a guy like Chris Middleton. Like, you can do it. You can do it at the defensive end. We've seen you do it. You can also do it on the offensive end. Your load has been drastically reduced. So go for it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm getting distracted. Have you seen this news that just came in?
Is it the Harden news?
Yeah, James Harden could be out closer to the start of a playoffs in a month due to a setback with his hamstring. And isn't KD also out? Is that a hamstring, yep, or is that something else?
It was a thigh contusion or something.
Oh, so that shouldn't be as serious, but It's just more concerns about the Nets being at full strength. And this, I'm just getting Raptors vibes from this year in terms of like some team might kind of stumble into a really good opportunity and they should just make the most of it. So that's why I think it really crystallizes how important it is for the Bucks to, you know, optimize themselves as much as possible. Because even for the people who think they're not up to the snuff of being able to win a championship this year, weird things happen in the playoffs and you always want to make the most of every Giannis season. So by doing these things, figuring out Giannis and pick and rolls, optimizing Chris, poking him with a stick and telling him to do stuff on defense, like the meme format, and seeing more of these PJ Tucker lineups, these are ways the Bucks could get ready to make the most out of that kind of an opportunity.
For sure. We have 15 games left in the regular season. We've got this upcoming week, like two Philly matchups back to back. Like that's going to be really interesting. So look for these things. That's your homework assignment, listeners. Just take everything we said and see if you can spot these. See if you can spot more and let us know what you think.
And sure. I was going to say, before the Philly games even, let us know what do you want to see? What should we have covered that we forgot or didn't think of? And maybe we can, when we reconvene later on this week, we can circle back and hit on some of the other good topics that we may have missed this episode.
For sure. For sure. So we've got... We covered a lot in this episode.
Yeah.
We're just getting distracted by Harden notifications. So closer to the play, I mentioned, like, obviously you want teams to be at full strength, but I did mention this in a locker room episode, and like counting on Brooklyn to be full strength is not a guarantee.
It's dicey. Even Philly, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, what have we ever gotten a full playoff run for Embiid where he's able to play every game at his normal minute? I don't think so. So, again, we're not rooting for this by any means, obviously, but it's just something to think about of, like, there could be more of an opportunity than it seems here. The Bucks need to tighten up and be ready to seize whatever they can get because sometimes you never know how many opportunities you're going to get. I'll put it that way.
For sure, for sure. Do we have anything else we need to cover on this episode?
I think that about does it.
Okay. Oh, shoot. Got to do Choose Your Fighter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I believe it's my turn, right?
Yes.
Oh, that's I can scroll down and see that it's my turn. So we haven't done this in a bit. We've been doing a little like segmented episodes, which is good. It's great content. But on these longer episodes, we can sort of get this Choose Your Fighter back. So again, I got to come back. I got to get the long prelude. Oh, it's got to happen. So today is a bad example. It's not very warm outside. It hasn't been warm outside for the past week. But we have gotten glimpses of summertime, haven't we, Ty?
We have. I can confirm.
Shouts to climate change. there's a lot of clips in this episode.
Yeah.
So it's your first day sort of experiencing the warmth. I'm going to give you three options of what you can do here, Ty. Mm. You can stay inside. You can sort of like open your windows or do whatever you want to inside. You could go outside and sort of like if you have the opportunity, like go on a balcony, go out on your porch, just, you know, close to home, just like have a beer or something. Or you can go and do things like by the beach or something. What are you choosing?
Not the last one. I'm not a beach guy. I don't swim. Not a swimmer, not a beach guy. I've tried to learn how to swim. I just sink. I don't think my line now is like I'll double back to swimming once I experience all the land there is to experience. I've got a lot to go, so I'm not going to say the beach. So it's staying inside or doing like a local, like a backyard or patio type deal?
Yeah.
Definitely the second one. This is something I've become huge on. I think I tweeted about this a couple of weeks ago that like it's having the first cookout of the year and it's been the last one for a while because, you know, like you said, it got cold. And this was just like a, you know, myself and my girlfriend cookout. It wasn't like a huge event. This is pre-vax in this household, but just getting out there, grilling up some brats, having a couple beers in the backyard, maybe having a fire, sitting on the patio furniture. So nice. It just, it hits different.
This was an easy one. I'll say that.
Because are you going with
that's
the same?
Yeah, that's the best option by far.
Getting with family and friends too and being able to do it, I'm looking so forward to having cookouts, man. I love cookouts.
Yeah. Or, you know, like sometimes, you know, you just want to vibe on your own too.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. Just sit out there and chill. Take in some nature.
Get like a nice iced tea or something and just watch the sunset when it's warm out. Wow, that's perfect.
A lemonade? Ooh. Or mix them. An Arnie Palmer. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. An Arnold Palmer. Perfect. Spike it if you want to.
There you go. Now we're circled back to being on brand.
That is, yeah, that's the goal. That's the goal. I'm really looking forward to that season again. We got it. It was a tease.
It was. It's been tough ever since it went away, but just knowing that we have more of that in store is getting me through some of these 40 degree and chilly days and windy. I'll tell you that. Like, I'm just like, I can taste putting on my brightly colored shorts and white socks and tennis shoes and standing outside by the grill with a beer in hand.
That's the your soxiest thing I've ever heard.
The soxiest?
Yeah, what color were your socks?
White. I don't get it. Oh. Yeah, that's fair. I'll own it.
Sorry.
We are who we are.
It was the color choice that did.
No, I know. That's fair. That was the year soxiest. Wow. Next level.
As you can tell, my brain is a little out there today, but
I think it's been gold. We might have to get you vaxxed before more pods, because I feel like we've tapped into something here.
Just get me just absolutely exhausted. that's the play here. I see how it is. Maybe I don't know. We don't have any more 9 p.m. starts.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. So maybe not for a while here. But that is motivation. What we just talked about, it's motivation for everyone to stay safe so we can have those moments out there. Again, I mentioned this at the top. If you have any questions about vaccine efficacy, safety, make sure to hit me up. I will do my best to direct you to credible resources. And I will say, as a general thing, thank you for listening to this episode of the Eurostep here on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. If you did enjoy this show, show it. Leave a rating on Apple. Tweet it to us. We love seeing those sort of things. And if you're not on Apple, sure, make an account. Do it. Cook the books. But you know, just subscribe on whatever podcast platform you listen to.
Have we dropped the Twitter ads this episode? We keep telling people to contact us. We got to make sure we give them the avenues.
Okay, go for it.
At Ty Windisch, TIWINDISCH on Twitter is me. At R. Cotty Jr., RKATTIJR is Rohan. Perfect. And at Eurostep Podcast is the podcast. So tweet at any or all of those three, and you'll be getting to us. And we love to hear from the listeners. So drop us a line.
For sure. Like we said earlier, I gave you guys a homework assignment, and you guys got to come through. But on a general, you know, make sure you're checking out all of the great content across the entire Blue Wire Podcast Network. As I said earlier, please stay safe, and we will talk to you next time.